What's up, everybody? Howdy. Welcome. I'm George Massey, the George Massey Show. We're going to be talking 90 Day Fiancé the other way today. So hopefully you guys are ready to talk some 90 Day with me. Waiting on Dee Dee to get here. Cara won't be here. I'll explain in a second why she won't be here. We wish she was here, but unfortunately Cara won't be here tonight. I'm sweating. It's so hot today. Let's get Dee Dee in here so we can get this going.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Better than you. You had a hurricane. Like, you look fine, but it's like you had a lot going on today and yesterday, right?
Yeah, it got intense. I thought my house was going to blow away there for a couple times, so.
That's really, really scary. Like, that's crazy. I'm sorry. Cara wanted to be here, but unfortunately, you know, there's a large uncontained fire near her. Not near her, like, that she's in danger, but it's near her that they turned off the power. So, unfortunately, she can't be here because there's no power and there's no internet, but she really wanted to be on tonight. So next week we're going to have to revisit so we can get all of Cara's insight on what happened this week. But Dee Dee and I are going to try to take it, and you know, I'm sure we'll miss all of the stuff that Cara needed to add in, because you know, Cara has her own little twist on everything. But I want to talk about I want to start with, who did I want to start with? I knew what I was doing, and then right at the last minute I got a phone call and I forgot. Oh, Statler. So Statler was back this week, and she arrived in the UK, and she was not excited, you know, about anything. I wasn't gonna say about van life, but she also wasn't really excited to see Dempsey at all after 2 months. And is it me, or do you feel like Statler arrived already checked out of this? Like, I feel like she had already given up on this relationship before she got there. And I feel like she's just one of those people who has to follow through, right, with what she said she was going to do. And I feel like she showed up because her word is important to her. And she didn't want to be there. She actually is disgusted at the fact that she's even there. But I feel like she showed up. And you know how, Dee Dee, when you and I go out and somebody does something that pisses me off and my face gives it away, and you're like, George, fix your face. Like, that's kind of how Statler was, like, because she was like, I'm excited. And then Dempsey was like, okay, your face doesn't know that. Like, you don't look excited, you look pissed. So I feel like she went over there and she was kind of like, I know this isn't going to work out, but I already made the promise, right, to do it. So I'm just going to follow through. And it's really making me wonder, though, because is she only doing it because Dempsey wanted her to? Because you know how we're watching the other way, right? So people are moving, you know, countries for people that they love. But is she only doing this because Dempsey wanted her to do it? Is this not, I was under the impression that this was a mutual decision, but the more we watch this season, it sounds like Dempsey decided she wanted to live in a van and travel, and then Statler is the one funding it. Like, that's kind of how Statler is telling us the story. So obviously there's two or three sides to this, right? Like, we don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes, but I don't know. Like, it just seems to me that Statler would be happier in Texas living the life that she was living before all this started. And it's like, in my opinion, break up before you sell your stuff, or like sell your car or move or let your apartment go. Like, there is no reason why you should throw away everything for somebody that you kind of like, kind of dislike, right? Like, when she got there, it kind of looked like she was more irritated at her and the situation than she wanted to see her, you know, after 2 months. You know, like James and Tata, for instance, after a month and 10 days, they rented a hotel just so they could annoy each other, right? So, I mean, how do you feel about Statler in this situation? I feel like she is definitely mentally checked out. I don't know if it's just the trip or like living overseas or if it's like the whole relationship, but she's definitely not checked in, right?
Well, if you want to go back just a little bit, whenever her and Dempsey first started dating, She had already made plans to move in with Dempsey without Dempsey even knowing.
Right.
Then when she gets over there, she falls madly in love with Dempsey. And then Dempsey finally gives in and tells her she can move in. I think it's what it is. Statler was just in love with the fact that someone was actually in love with her, that she wasn't thinking before she agreed to all this. And I think it's starting to hit home that she had to sell everything. She's the only one that's going to be working. She's the only one that's going to be paying, you know, for them to live. And then they're going to be living in a 20-foot van. I mean,
yeah,
traveling all over the place. I mean, I don't think she realized what she was agreeing to until after it was too late. And now it's starting to, everything's starting to fall on top of her now. So she's like, wow, I should have, you know.
Made better choices, yeah. Right? Hey, Betsy. Hey, Betsy, my bestie is in here. Hey, Kim. So yeah, I think my one tweet last night was, if uncertainty was a person, it was Statler, right? Like, she's not standing on her decision. She doesn't stand on the decision she made. She can see that she made an awful, awful choice. And it's like, I get it. She's told us that being an adopted child, she always feels like she has to do a little more for people to love them. And, you know, that's like that's a trauma response, because, you know, I won't understand what that's like, you know, being an adopted child. I'll never understand the emotional impact that has on you. But, you know, as an adult, she said that she feels like high geek in the kitchen. She feels that she has to go out of her way for the people that she's in a relationship with in order for them to not leave, you know, because she was like my own parents, you know, the people that should have, that are obligated to love me didn't. So she's like, well, I have to do whatever people expect of me in order to be in that relationship. And I think that Dempsey maybe possibly took advantage of that aspect of her trauma, because Dempsey's super.
I really do. I think she did. I think Dempsey's taking advantage of Statler, in any way she can, because, I mean, I've been watching Statler too, like on her lives and stuff. So, I mean, I'm starting to understand where Statler is coming from. And whenever they first come out, we thought that it was Statler and not Dempsey. But now watching it and listening to both sides of the story, I think it's more Dempsey than it is Statler.
See, I want to believe that Dempsey is a decent person, right? But the way Statler tells the story, it really does make me feel like, she knew that, you know, you went through that trauma as a child being an adopted person. She knows that your past relationships, you were paying their rent. You were doing more stuff for them. And she might have taken advantage because she was so excited. She's like, oh, are you ready for this van? And Statler's like, no, like, this is all you. Like, none of this has anything in me written about it at all. She's like, this is all you. This is what's going to make you happy. And Statler's just kind of along for the ride. And no, let's be real. Living in a tiny ass van with someone that you barely even, I don't know, Statler didn't even look like she liked her at this point. Like, she's so annoyed with everything that she did for her. But I will say this, you know, no one put a weapon to Statler's head and told her that she had to do any of this stuff for anyone, right? Like, she is a big girl. She's an adult. And she made some bad decisions that she doesn't stand on, right? Like, we've all did it. I've made decisions, and then after I look back on it, I was like, man, who raised me? You know, like, that was really dumb. I should have thought it through. But I mean, once you fall in love with someone and you think that you're ready to change your entire world for that person,
yeah.
And then that person turns out to be somebody that you don't even recognize. You know, it's hard for you to stand on those decisions. Speaking of decisions and recognizing stuff, Sarper's ex, Nora, talked to Shekinah. Shekinah had a chance to confront Sarper about what this girl said. So Sarper, his original lie, I don't want to say that, that's not fair. His original story is that Shekinah is the first woman that he ever said, I love you to. And then Shekinah dropped this bomb on us last night. She might have said it before. I don't, she talks a lot. But she was like, you texted me 3 days after we met and said, I love you. And that really stood out to me because he was like, oh, well, before you, Shekinah, I had never told another woman that I loved her. And I was like, 3 days after their first booty call, right? Because it was like a one night stand. He texted her and said, I love you. And she was like, that seems like game to me, right? Like, that's what a guy would do to reel a girl in, to get her back in bed quick. And I think that Sarper has told women that he loved them, but in a game player type of way. And I think this is, I don't want to be Team Sarper or anything, but I think Sarper really does love Shekinah. So this is the first woman that he said, I love you to, and he meant it. But I don't think that he's intelligent enough to decipher that, to get the information to Shekinah to make her understand that. I think Sarper was telling girls he loved them all the time. Because literally, when he met Shekinah, he was like, oh yeah, I just wanted to have sex with you. I didn't want to date you. I didn't want anything from you. I just want to sleep with you, send you back on your way to LA. No big deal. He's literally 3 days later texted, I love you. Then she said when she came to visit months later, he was like, okay, now I really want to be in a relationship with you. Now I'm being exclusive to you. And she was like, I thought we were being exclusive this whole time. So literally you've been banging other people. Like, and I think that, but I really do believe though, for real, that Sarper, the first person he said, I love you to and meant it was probably Shekinah. I do believe that, but I don't know if he has the words in him to get that point across. Do you disagree? Do you think he's just a liar?
I disagree with you because he don't love nobody. He's lying to that woman because first of all, he let her go. Well, I'm not gonna say let, but she went to go visit her or see his ex. Okay. She had been begging him for a couple of months to buy her a vanity is what she said. Okay, when you are fixing to catch somebody in the wrongdoing and they just automatically up and do it, especially if it's a man, they guilty.
You not wrong. Because think about it. When a man did something wrong, what does he show up to the woman's house with?
Flowers, candy,
yes.
something, one of her favorite things.
Because
not all women like flowers and candy, but you know, most of us do, but not all women.
With some form of a present, or if you want to get technical, it's a peace offering. It's please don't beat me up when I arrive because I know what I did was wrong. That's what men do. Men are very transparent. When a man did something wrong, he's going to start complimenting you. He's gonna buy you something. He's gonna want to take you shopping. He's gonna, things that you've been telling him for months, all of a sudden he's booking that cruise that you were talking about. Like, because men know, you were like, well, she knows that I screwed up, now it's on me to fix it, right? And I feel like the look that he gave when she said Nora reached out, it was, I stand on that, it was sheer terror, right? Like, it was terror. Like, it was the, you know how if you walk into a room and you think someone is dead, and then when you walk into the room, the person is standing in the room alive? That was the look that I felt like he gave when he saw that it was Nora. And I was like, so what you did to her? Because I was like, so why are you so nervous? But then he did admit in the confessional, he was like, you know, the old me, I didn't care, you know, how anyone felt. You know, I did what I wanted to do. I didn't care about their feelings. And I was like, well, you got to own that. You know, like your past can come back to haunt you. If you treated every woman that you encounter like she didn't matter, you know, there is a possibility that some of these women are angry, pissed, bitter, unhappy, sick of your shit. You know, so when you posted, and it's funny because he would not post Shekinah for like a whole year. And he knew when he posted it, all the women that he treated like garbage were going to be like, mm-hmm. Oh, so now you're ready to settle down after you ghosted me and like 500 other people. So it's only fair that these women are able, you know, to bash him, right? Like, I feel like if you treat somebody like they're garbage, it's only fair that when you're ready to settle down, they treat you the same way, right? Like, I feel like he thinks that they're not entitled to their feelings and they're not entitled to tell Shekinah what happened. Not that I think it matters. I think Shekinah is going to be with him regardless, right? Like, I don't think Shekinah is like the sharpest tool in the tool shed. So I feel like even with all of the information given, she'll still marry him, right? Like, I feel like she'll still deal, because for some reason, Shekinah's convinced that she's won the lottery because Sarper decided to stop banging other women and just bang her. Like, she acts like she got the Powerball number, and she's like one in a million woman that he chose. And I'm not convinced that Sarper's even 100% faithful. For a person who's been with 2,500 people, it'll be very hard for me to believe that you're in a relationship now and you haven't slipped up once, right?
Like, that's we all know whenever she's in the United States with her daughter that he is out doing whatever it is Sarper does. And if she was as smart as she claims to be, whenever she told him about Nora, however you pronounce her name, his mouth dropped to the floor. He turned as white as a ghost. His facial expression by themselves told on him. She didn't, just by that, she didn't even have to go see her. He told on himself right then and there.
I always tell people, your reaction is more than, you don't have to say anything, it's your reaction. I guess that's the best way to say it. Like, the way you react to an allegation about you, they don't need to run a background or ask around. It's your initial reaction to something that someone says that you did is gonna give you away. It's so transparent, you know? And I mean, there are people who can lie without flinching, right? There are people who are able to play it off and make it seem like they're telling you the truth. They don't seem to react, but so, he reacted like, oh crap. Like, of all, because it seemed like of all the women, that was like the one he didn't want her to talk to, because he was like, she could have talked to anybody. Why does it have to be Nora? You know, like, why does it have to be her? And she didn't even say, like, let me be 100% here, she didn't even say anything really, really terrible, in my opinion. I thought things were gonna be way worse, right? When she met with her, I thought it was gonna be like, he's verbally abusive, or he does this. Like, I thought it was gonna be really bad. She didn't say any of that. She just said that he's a liar. And he ghosted her. Instead of being a real man and breaking up with her, he just stopped calling her. But he admitted that. He was like, I just cut off all communication. You know, if things get too serious, I just cut off all communication. I was like, but you expect love to come your way. You expect karma is not going to find you and knock on your door and ask you where you've been. You know, like, Nora is karma. That's literally, when you treat people that way, because I always tell people, you don't have to like, love or marry anybody, but you have to be man or woman enough to tell them to their face that you don't want to be with them anymore, right? Like, ghosting people is literally the lowest, most disgusting thing that's ever been created into the dating world. You know, when did we stop being accountable for ending a relationship? And then the worst part about it is people will be dating people that are local, and then you go out and see the person, and then they act like they don't know you. Not only do they act like they don't know you, they act like they don't see you, because they don't want to fess up or be accountable for them ghosting you and not being mature enough to say, hey, this isn't going to work. I don't want to be with you. And it's like, this is all women, especially women, need to hear. If that woman, Nora, would have heard from him, he would have called and said, hey, you know what? Things are moving faster than I thought. I don't want anything serious. I thought that this was just for fun. Like, I don't want to waste your time. I'm sorry. You know, I know that you'll find somebody. You're beautiful, whatever. She wouldn't have had anything to say now. She would have said that he was an admirable person for speaking up and saying what, look, I don't want to be with you. But the way that he handled it, now he's got all these women waiting for that one shot of revenge. And it's like, when you treat people that way, you got to be expecting revenge from all these different angles.
Riley. Man, you fixing to have problems. You, what you mean you don't think Sarper is a liar? That man.
See,
Lord have mercy.
Riley said something interesting. Riley, you said, I don't believe he's a liar, but he's slick. What's the difference between a liar and slick? In my opinion, being
it's
slick.
It's the same thing.
Right? That's my opinion. If you're slick, that means that you tell people whatever they want to hear to get your way, and I'm not mistaken, that make you a liar, right? Like, I'm pretty sure being slick makes you a liar, because that means that you stretch the truth and you tell people whatever they want to hear in order to get your way. And I know Sarper, that's the definition of Sarper. He tells Shekinah, as well as probably all these other women, exactly what he thinks they want to hear. He's literally a politician, right? He tells people whatever they need to hear to feel comfortable in that situation.
And, you don't mean the women, bed. Yes, yeah.
Yes, women, as long as he tells the woman, oh, you're beautiful, you're pretty, I love you, I can see a future with you. Women are all about those. You say that, you're moving in the right direction, you're going to end up in her bedroom. But the problem is he's a liar. And all of these women that he's used the same exact tactics on, they all have something to say about it, right? Because he's not actually like sharp in the shed either, right? He uses the same tactic on every woman. He even used it on Shekinah because she's caught him. That she was like, you told me you love me 3 days after we met. What do you mean you don't tell people you love them? You clearly do.
Riley, it's the same thing. If you twist the truth, you're still lying.
Twisting the truth is lying. Also, omitting things that would change the way people make it's decisions lying. Is lying. Absolutely. So if you omit pertinent information from a person in order to manipulate the way they make decisions, you're lying to them. Because if they had a different version of the story or the truth and they would have made an opposite decision of the decision you manipulated them to make, that means that you're a liar. Because information is needed in order to make good, intelligent decisions. So the way people are nowadays, they'll omit the information that you need to make an intelligent decision, so you'll make the decision that they want you to make. That's being a liar. Like, and it's also a form of manipulation too, because you're lying to some, you're not necessarily lying, you're just not giving them all of the information needed. And especially when it's character traits about you, you're basically shaping the way they think of you through manipulation. You're not telling them who you really are.
Riley, Sarper does not look, no, Sarper is ugly. I'm sorry, but Sarper is, he's ugly. He is a plastic. I don't know what you want to call him, but he's there is nothing nice looking about Sarper. Nothing.
Sarper is what you call, you nailed it. I think you said plastic, right? Plastic, where, you know, if you catch Sarper right when he woke up out of the bed before he spent 45 minutes to 2 hours doing his hair and doing his face, Sarper would look nothing like what he looks like now. He's one of those people that are plastic. You have to catch them after they get ready for the day, after they get their face done, their hair done, they to look a certain way. Plastic people, it's very scary when you see like a person just normal right out of bed. You almost don't recognize that person. And I think Sarper has mastered, so is Shekinah though. Like some people feel, so yeah, Riley, you're right. He looks 3D printed. That is 100% accurate. Like, he doesn't look realistic. I think when we first met Sarper and Shekinah on the one season they started on, we called them real life filters. Isn't that what we called them? Because they kind of look like people, if filters walked around in real life. You know how when people use a filter on their photo and they look perfect? That's how they look, but like in real life. And it's really interesting because you know that they both had a crap ton of work done, right? Like it's very obvious they've had a crap ton of work done. I don't knock it. You know, if you want to do your surgery, especially in Turkey, you're going to get a huge discount. If you want to look a certain way, I think it's important. But you nailed it, Didi, because he's ugly on the inside, right? Like he can change the way that he looks on the outside. He can change the way that he treats people, but on the inside, deep down, he treats people really bad and he lies to people and he's a manipulator and he's ugly. And ugliness is something that comes from within. Really, really beautiful people are ugly on the inside. You know, like some people just, they don't have that inner beauty that's needed. They treat people like they're disposable. And I feel like Sarper has been treating people like they're disposable this whole time. And that's why he's ended up where he is now at 43, 44 years old, no serious relationship. The kid that he does have, he can't find. You know, this is literally his doing, his decision-making, his making it seem as though people are disposable, and this is karma coming right back at him.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
Riley, you trying to butter me up now? Okay, I see what you're doing.
So what do you think about this Josh and Lily situation where he thinks that she's not in love with him? Because he said that he would call or text and she doesn't pick up, right? Let's be real. Lily is a business owner. She has a job. She's busy. And he's like, well, and she plays badminton with a bunch of dudes. So he's like, oh, I just feel like I'm not important in her life. Now, I'm going to say this, unbiased. I would feel a little insecure because Lily is a independent woman who doesn't need a man whatsoever. She can take care of herself. Her happiness comes from herself. Her income comes from herself. Her house has an elevator in it. You know, like, I would also feel a little insecure, like, well, what am I bringing to the table? So in that aspect, I can understand the insecurity. I would feel insecure because men, being simple beings that we are, we need to feel that we are bringing something important to the table. And usually in a relationship, men want to be the provider, because when you're the provider, you're the highest of the hierarchy, right? Because housing, feeding, taking care of people is the most, it doesn't get any higher than that. You are literally the highest in the hierarchy. You can make decisions. People tend to conform to what you say. They kind of obey you, right? Like when you make those decisions. So I understand why he feels like, well, what am I gonna bring to that table? What, because who's to say she doesn't wake up one day and says, hey, I wanna date somebody else. She can do that. She's rich. She doesn't have no kids. You know, like she has her own, there's no reason to keep him around. And it makes me think about it from a different aspect, because men look at it as a way to being insecure. But imagine the woman in that situation, like the woman who she's staying home, taking care of kids, cooking, cleaning, not working. Then she feels that she has to need to make herself more desirable to the man to make sure that he doesn't just wake up one day and say, hey, I'll just start a new family. You know, like, imagine how that makes a woman feel. So it kind of made me look at it from two different aspects. So I was like, I get it, because men, the only thing men really need to feel secure is to be needed for something, right? You got to be needed for something. Like, just like women, they like to feel loved. They need acknowledgement of love. They need reassurance. Men are even simpler than that. Like, men just want to be needed for some reason in that woman's life. And that's all he needs. He's super secure in that. But he doesn't have that. She doesn't need him at all. She's been, at her age, she's been totally happy and fine without a husband. So I kind of understood it. So, I mean, how do you feel? Do you feel like he should be insecure? Or do you feel like he should just, you know, he should deal with the fact that she's independent and learn how to live with a woman who can take care of herself?
He needs to put on his grown-up pants and just get used to the woman that he married is a very independent woman. These days, we were just talking about this. Was it Sunday night? This day and time, a woman don't need a man. If a woman is with a man, it's because we want to be with them. It's not because we need them. And a lot of men, they're not the alpha and the omega anymore. So, and that right there hits them where it hurts. I'm trying to explain it, but I don't know how to explain it.
No, I understand. I understand. Men need to feel like they're the dominant dominant power in that relationship. And now, like you said, 2024, you know, a woman, well, let's put it back to the 1950s. A woman would move out of her mom's house and dad's house into a man's house when they got married. And she depended on that security from a man. In 2024, men are moving out of their parents' house into a woman's house because she's more secure than he is, right? Like, that's kind of the shift that we're living in now. Like, we don't really see independent men as much as we see independent women. Like, we've shifted a lot. And I think that, you know, for men, they don't really know where they stand in the relationship. They don't know their purpose. You know, men need a purpose, and usually it's paying the mortgage. It's buying groceries. It's, you know, back in the 50s, a man would give a woman an allowance. You know, this is how far we've come, right? And now women are giving men allowances, right? And I think that this whole situation with Josh, it would be an interesting shift for me because, you know, I like to have my own and do for myself. But like I told y'all, if there's a Lily who wants to slide into my DMs and move me into her house that has an elevator, I would like to hear from you. Like, I'm not saying I couldn't conform to that. I feel like I definitely would like to be the prince of the castle, right? Like, I'm not against it.
Well, but I mean, if you, first of all, thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. It got interesting. I'll just put it that way. I'll text you later. But first of all, if you're going to be a kept man, then why are you going to be crying? I mean, why are you going to cry if you're being a kept man?
Because it's being a kept man is scary. Just like being a trophy wife is scary. Haven't you heard the term where he trades her in for a newer model? Like, I feel like it still applies even for the kept men. What if she decides that, you know, 44 is too old for a kept man? She wants to do 34. That's scary, right? Like, if you don't have a job, you don't have an income, you're depending on every single aspect of your life from this person, and this person can wake up one day and just decide, I'm good. I don't need you anymore. Because literally, this is the position she's in. She doesn't need anybody. I've seen her house. She doesn't need anybody, right? Like, she could definitely wake up one day and just decide, I'm going to be single, or I'm going to try dating a 22-year-old, right? Like, this is literally what women, trophy wives, fear every day, right? Like, that's just that fear where, that's why I think it's best for relationships to have a balance. You know, I feel like you should bring the same amount, 50-50, to each other, and then you build together. Because I feel like if one person brings everything and the other person is just there taking, how long do you really think that relationship is going to last, right? From both sides, you know? Like, I feel like if there isn't any compatibility and, like, equality between the two of you, I really don't feel like it's going to happen.
Well, no.
Well, Snap Bunny, he said that he sold his house and he got a little money, and he did try to help with the wedding suits, like the clothes for the wedding. But yeah, it seems like she's broke and he's broke. So yeah, that's my whole thing too. It's like, how long is that relationship going to work? You know, he can't work.
If he sold his house and he's already broke after helping with the wedding, then he didn't have he didn't sell his house. He sold a bedroom or something. Well, I mean, how you, because they're only inviting 30 people. Like,
maybe he sold his house right after he bought it. Like, I know, like, if you buy a house, I think it's, you probably shouldn't sell within the first, like, 10 years of your mortgage, because you'll probably be really close to being upside down. So maybe he bought it and then within, like, a few, 4 or 5 years sold it. So then he only got, like, maybe $10,000 after he paid off the loan. That's my, I don't know him, though. I could be 100% wrong. Maybe I'm wrong and he just didn't make very much money off the house. I don't know. But I know that when you sell a house quickly after you buy it, because they're adding in your interest into that mortgage. So when you sell it, you're going to owe more than originally what your mortgage was. So you're not going to have like a big amount left over.
That don't make no sense. Their relationship don't even make no sense to me, to be honest with you. It don't.
I don't get the attraction. You know, like, I don't understand what attracted her to him. Like, I don't understand it. I don't understand her. I don't understand her personality yet. You know, I've been trying to, like, get to know her a little better throughout the episodes. I don't know what makes her tick. I don't know what made her want to get an American man, you know, because her culture is very strong. And I think my first thought, though, for real, hey, Shelly, my first thought was she didn't want to marry a man from China because men in China don't want to be with a woman that independent. Because, you know, in their culture, the man is always supposed to take care of the woman regardless of the situation. And I think that her level of independence is very threatening to a man of her culture, right? Like, I feel like he's not going to conform to her being the shot caller, the one who decides, hey, Kelly, the one who decides how much money is going to be spent, how much. Like, I don't think her culture, a man in that culture, is going to conform to that. And I feel like that's probably why she ended up with an American, right? Because in America, we're very open to different types of relationships. But is this going to work?
But seeing a woman with that kind of independency, even here in America, that would make a man feel very small.
Yeah. It does. No, you're right. In all cultures, it does. But there's a lot of guys in our country. Like, I see it all the time. The girl goes to work, he stays home. There's this guy on TikTok. He posts about it. He stays home and play video games while his girlfriend goes to work. And then she brings him lunch on her lunch break, and he, like, don't do nothing. And he's so, like, it's so we're way more open over here to that type of situation. And again, it's more so, what's up with the girl that she's letting him do that, if anything? But again, I try not to judge people, right? I try to let people live their lives the way they want to live their lives. But it's just like, why you got to go to work all day long and he get to play video games all day long? Like, who hurt you and how bad was it that you think that this is a good situation, right? Like, what's going on?
Oh, no.
So we watched Forbidden Love. And, oh, wait, before we end this, I want to talk about this $700 a month car payment that James has. I guess they bought a car that broke down and they didn't get it fixed. And then when they left Maine to go to Indonesia, he's still making $700 payments on this truck or car. I don't know what it is. What do you think? Okay, so how many banana chips do you think they would have to sell to make $700 US dollar to send back to the US on a monthly basis? Because he dropped this bomb on us last night that they have to continue making payments on this car, trucks, whichever, $700 a month while they're over there. That doesn't work. But I was like, how much money do you get in Indonesia for selling? Like, I don't know, like, what they're, if they have a minimum wage, actually. I don't even think they have one. I think that you just make what you make. But I will say this, her parents, Tata's parents' house is massive. Like, it had pillars, it had, like, several floors. So I'm beginning to think that her family is making a lot of money on banana chips. Like, remember I was knocking it earlier in the season. I was like, how much money can you really make on banana chips? I know Indonesia is a very poor country. We saw a lot of people from Indonesia on the show in the past, but her family doesn't seem to be struggling, right? Their houses, it looked like a hotel. My first thought when they pulled up, it looked like a hotel. And I was like, whoa, these people, this is why she wanted to move back. The life that she was living in Indonesia. Because, you know, the first thing that I thought of was, why would you want to leave the U.S. to go back to Indonesia? Usually you struggle in Indonesia. They're not struggling in Indonesia, like, at all. Like, they are definitely, they're living good. But have you noticed in these other countries, especially European countries, there's always insects and bugs in the house? What's up with that? You see the spider on the wall? Did you see the lizard?
Lizard? Like, oh, my gosh. I would have freaked out.
Remember when Brandon and Mary, when they got to her place and there were spiders everywhere in the house? And it's like, why is it that they can't keep the bugs out? Like, I'm so confused. Probably like, I
because the whole thing is open. I mean, like even say, like in Mexico, all the houses are open. They're like open. Like, there's hardly any doors, there's hardly any windows. The whole thing is just open. It's just open.
I can't do the open. Oh, it has to do with the climate. Yeah, they're not your usual Indonesian folks. Well, exactly. They have a lot of money. But the downstairs did look like a store. It did look like a storefront. And I think maybe they're selling banana chips out of the storefront. Like, I don't know. But they're doing really good. So it crossed my mind, though, because I was like, how much, like, let's say to make $700 US just to send back, that would probably be like $40,000 of their money, right? Like, it seems, because remember when we were talking about Brandon and Mary's store and she said that she was making like $1.79 a month profit from the store or something crazy? And I'm like, so how would you ever pay for anything ever, right? Like, I don't get it.
Well, first of all, let's talk about, he said he wanted to go over there with $10,000.
Yes.
But he spent $8,000 to fix his car that he's still paying on.
Right. So he had no money when he came over.
The math ain't mathing. What happened to your car that you had to spend $8,000 to get it fixed?
The most I ever spent to get a car fixed was like $3,000-something. And I had to replace like a transmission. Like, it was like something very, very major. The only reason why I did it, I really loved the car. And it was paid off. And looking back, I should have junked it. You know, I shouldn't have never done that. That was stupid. I could have purchased a whole car for what I did. But I wanted to keep that car because it had like sentimental value to me. But then like probably a few years later, then the whole engine went out. And then I was just like, oh, shit. Like, well, what a waste of my money, right? Like, I literally screwed up. But I don't know. Like, if a car needs $8,000 worth of repairs, that car is not going to see any money from me. And if he did owe money on it, I mean, not saying screw the loan company, but I probably am not going to continue paying on a car that doesn't work. Right? Like, I'm sorry. I'm not like a Kardashian.
There's no way.
Right?
There's no freaking way I would I would pay that much money. He never said what happened to the car. He just said that he had to get it fixed. The diva was asking if it was in an accident. He just said he had to get it fixed. So he had $10,000 saved. That would have lasted him for 2 years in Indonesia. But he had to spend $8,000 of it. Either he's lying or something else happened to that $8,000, because why would you want to pay $8,000 on a car that you're still paying on?
And then that's another car.
You're going to have to turn around and pay $700 a month at the $2,000 you went over there on?
Yeah.
The math ain't mathing.
I don't.
He lying about something.
Yeah. You're probably right. I don't. I learned from Judge Judy, if something doesn't make sense, it's usually not true. Right? That's usually the consensus that I got from Judge Judy. She was like, if you tell me a story, it don't make sense, probably ain't true. Because you're if you tell it to me and it doesn't make sense, you're probably making it up. And if you had to make it up, you're lying. So it's not going to be a realistic story. Oh, so I want to talk about this Forbidden Love episode real quick. So we were watching Elmer and Lindsay, who's pregnant, by the way. And she put parental controls on Elmer's phone because he was Amish, and now he's no longer Amish. And apparently, being an Amish male, they have a lot of struggle with technology, pornography, and staying faithful, I guess, as part of their, because they were very deprived of normal things. Like, and I guess he said when he was 18 years old is when he realized that sex existed. I can't even imagine, right? Like, I was raised deep, deep, deep in the church, and I knew about it way before that, right? Like, I was very surprised. But I wanted to get your opinion on parental controls on your husband or boyfriend. Like, if you had to take away his privileges on his phone, is that relationship worth staying in? Like,
No, I'm not going to be with anybody. I don't care how long I've been in the relationship. I don't care how much I care for them. If I've got to put parental control on your stuff, it's over. Done.
He will continually lie to her face, right? Because she'll keep asking him, are you watching pornography? He'll continually lie. And, excuse me, he said that lying is a normal part of his response, because in the Amish church, anything that you did could get you shunned or, you know, thrown out of the church. So they just lie about everything. So do you think that that's an excuse, though? Like, is it an excuse? Because he's not really Amish anymore. Is it an excuse to just look at your wife in the face and lie to her and then just say, oh, it's my religion?
Yes, he's just using that. So I guess so she'll be like more lenient, you know, like their friend, his wife is lenient or was lenient on him. If you have to keep asking your partner, whether it's a man or a woman, to not do something, you have to keep asking them over and over and over again, then they don't respect you. They don't, you know what I'm saying? You probably just call it quits. Because if you have to ask them to do something more than one time, it ain't even worth the fight for.
Well, she already pregnant. So I get, because she's like, well, it's too late now, I'm pregnant. I'm like, well you're probably
gonna. She did say she wasn't scared to be a single mom. So
she did, because I was gonna say, you're probably gonna be a single mom, because if he's not ready to give up porn, how is he gonna be ready to be a father? You know, like, because being a father, you have to be ready to sacrifice, compromise. You know, a lot of people say the day your child is born, you turn into a different person. You know, you have to kind of retire the person used to be, and everything has to be about, you know, that child, that family that you're building. And I just don't think he's ready. And again, he's pretty young. You know, she picked a younger guy. He's a lot younger than she is. And I think that that plays a role in it as well. It's not just that he used to be Amish. I think that, you know, for his age, he's just discovering sex, and now he's married. You know, and I always used to say, like, if you are in a bad relationship or you're in a bad marriage, the first thing you should do is go out and explore. You should explore your options. Don't go from, and like in his instance, don't go from not knowing sex existed to being married. You know, like, go out and do a lot of stuff, right? Like, I need you to experience everything. So when you do try to settle down, you don't feel like you're missing out. You know, that FOMO feeling where he's like, oh, well, I just, you know, got her pregnant. Now I'm married. Now I don't know if I could have ended up with someone else. I could have dated around. You know, like, I don't understand why people are so quick to jump into things when they haven't explored anything. You know, like, especially if you've never been in a serious relationship, your first serious relationship shouldn't be a marriage. Your first serious relationship should probably be a one-night stand, right? Like, you should try something first. You don't even know if you like it. You know, like, you don't even know if you like marriage.
Try all the flavors of the Kool-Aid.
Right? Exactly. You don't even know if you like being married because you've never done anything. Like, I wouldn't go to a restaurant and order octopus and like, I would eat it off of somebody else's plate first, right? Like, I would be like, let me taste that real quick. Let me see if I actually want that. Like, you have to go and try all types of different things before you actually commit to one thing for the rest of your life. And I mean, I know marriage isn't forever anymore, but it's like, don't go committing to people and stuff when you're not even sure if you like it. Like, marriage is something that you should talk to people about. Like, get examples from people and research. Like, I feel like people are getting married just because maybe their religion wants them to, or maybe because their parents got married early. And it's like, that's a bad decision in itself. Like, you should experience things on your own. Don't just do it because other people did it first. He got his first vagina and lost it, then found porn. Wait, how did he lose it? She's still there. She said that he sits in his truck and watches porn and doesn't come in the house. Like, actually, he found the first one and he's neglecting it, right? Like, it's even worse. Like, you would think he would be obsessed with her more than he's obsessed with the phone, because it's a real living one right in front of him, right? And it's like he's more obsessed with the fantasy.
Yeah, because she says that she has to beg him to have sex with her.
Which is crazy for somebody who only learned about sex when he was 18, and he's no longer interested in it because, and I think that this is a good definition of addiction to porn. Remember we were talking about that with Gino, and I was like, I don't think he's really addicted. I don't think Gino is addicted to porn. I think Gino is just sick of Jasmine shit. Like, I think this situation, he's really addicted to porn, and he has no real expectation of real life intimacy, because he's so into the addiction. I think this is a true display of that.
Yeah.
Donna said he's missing the sheep. I really hope that he was not, but they made it very clear, and so did his friend, that there's relations with animals. And that is so, so disturbing. Like, I don't
very know disturbing.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, but wait, who else was on this week on Forbidden Love?
I'm still learning their names because I'm still trying to, I mean, I like it, but I'm not really paying attention. The one that her sister called her husband a terrorist, they were on there.
Yes, they were on. I believe his name is Mohammed.
I can't remember. The other one that she's supposed to be converted into a Jew.
Yeah, Eli and her. Okay, so with the girl who, I believe they're from Iowa, or is it Missouri? I think they're from Missouri, and she wanted him to go to meet her sister for her birthday or whatever, and she thought it would be a good idea because they haven't spoken in 2 years, and the sister refuses to apologize for using the word terror. She claims that it wasn't she was calling him one. She just said it out of context. Like, I don't remember how she said it, but she refused to she refused to apologize. So how do you feel? Do you feel like she owes him an apology? Because he feels like she owes him an apology for using that word. Do you feel like calling anyone of that religion that word is completely unacceptable? Do you feel like it was it's like calling someone out of their name or calling a racial slur? Like, how do you feel about that?
Yes, she owes him an apology. I mean, you know, just because each culture is different. Each culture is different. Each culture, whether you're American, you're from another country, each culture has their own flaws. And just because you're of that culture doesn't mean that you're the same as what your culture does. So why are you going to call somebody, like in this case, why did she call him a terrorist?
Yeah, he's done nothing to lead anyone to believe that he would engage in any type of terroristic behavior, right? Like, he's done nothing. She just did it based on the fact that he is a Muslim. And exactly. I think that it's so terrible because generalization of cultures is something that we are so guilty of in the world. Like, we look at one person of one culture and people want to characterize that one person as the whole culture. And I understand that their lack of understanding of the Muslim religion, I think it's playing a big part in this, because he used the word obey. And you know how, oh my gosh, remember when Angela heard the word obey? Like, Americans do not respond well to the word, she needs to obey her husband, to that terminology. But I think that in their culture, a woman has to obey her husband. You know, like, that's part of the religious part of their culture. And like he said, for instance, she's not ever allowed to walk out of the house half naked. Most men in America would agree with him, right? But since he's a Muslim, they look at it as he's controlling her. And it's like, I know that it's hard for Americans to look at it that way, because we're at a point now where we're allowing, and we should have always been allowing, women to express themselves however they want to dress, however they want to look, however they want to carry themselves. We're no longer telling women that they have to cover up or they have to carry themselves a certain way. Like, we're to the point now where women are allowed to just express themselves in whatever way that they want. So hearing those type of practices, it almost seems like, oh, well, he's just trying to control her. He's trying to make her property, or he's taking ownership of her. I understand the concern, but she's married and she's happy. And if she wanted to leave, she had every opportunity to leave. You know, like, she could get on. He said that he would send her back home to see her sister alone all the time. So if she wanted to get out of this relationship, she could have just got on the plane to go back to her family and never came back. So she's clearly not in danger, right? Like, if she had every opportunity to leave, when he always avoided seeing her family up until this time where they went out together, and he wore the full Muslim man attire, which she thinks was a really bad idea, because she was like,
I think that was a bad idea, because when you're walking into a small town, especially like they said, it's nothing but, how can I say, American people, white people. I mean, in like little small towns like that, the majority of them are going to be racist. The majority of them. When you're walking in there dressed in a, I think they call it a throbe. If dressed in the throbe with the hairpiece and everything, that right there, I mean, it's a wonder that it didn't start, you know, some problems in the restaurant. I mean, that was a little bit over the top. He shouldn't have did that. And I don't think he controls her. I think if anybody does any of the controlling, she seems more like she's controlling him.
How so?
Because, I mean, he didn't even want to have to go to her sister's. Okay, well, she pretty much put down an ultimatum for him to go.
Oh, you're right. His initial response was, I don't ever want to be in contact with your sister ever again. You're right. And then all of a sudden, he's on an airplane and they're in front of her sister. sister. So you're right. If anything, she's the one making him conform to what she wants. Because if I don't want to see somebody, trust me, we're not going to be in the same place. You can't pay me. There's not enough money in the world for me to be around people that do not like me. You know, like, I have no interest. And I also have no interest in trying to convince people to like me. You know, so that's like the most exhausting thing in the world. Trying to prove to someone that I'm a likable person is like something that I'm never going to do. If you can't see that, if my actions and character traits don't stand out to you, then I don't want to be around you. Like, if you think after all the things that I've done that I'm a bad person or I'm a hateable person, then I want you to live with that, you know, like, and stay away from me with it. I don't want to be a part of it.
Well, like I always say, your perception of me is none of my business.
Exactly. It's like, if people don't like you, you don't like you, you know, and you don't like me. And the last person who cares is me, right? Wait, so an E. Scott George collab is off the table. Absolutely off the table. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. George knows I would show up at his, I know where he lives, okay? I would show up at his house and we would have problems, okay?
I'm still waiting on my apology. Like, I'm still waiting on my apology. I sound like her sister on the show, right? I sound like Muhammad on the show. I'm still waiting on my apology. I didn't get it yet, so. I'm not, like, I don't hold grudges. No, I lied. I do. I lied. I'm sorry, y'all. I lied. I do. I hold grudges. So if he was to apologize, then there's like a 14% chance I might forgive him. Like 13 or 14%. That's zero, like, it's very low.
Zero chance, George. Zero chance. Zero chance.
It's very low.
Made me go to Florida, George.
No. I mean, I highly doubt that he would even apologize. I think that accountability is something that he lacks. So I'm not even waiting on that. I feel like that'll never happen. So, Sad Bunny says 2%. Okay, let's go with 2% chance. 2% chance. That's good, right? Isn't that like condoms, 2%? that's pretty low percentage, right? Like, let's stick with the lowest of the low. All right, so we're going to wrap up. We're going to come back Sunday, hopefully, right? Because there's been a lot of weird, strange Mother Nature issues. But hopefully all of us will be back. Me, Dee Dee, and Kara. On Sunday, so we can talk about The Other Way, part 3 of the tell-all, No Limits, Happily Ever After. We're getting more into the Angela and Michael saga. There's going to be a private investigator who is going to release some info, supposedly, about Michael. Also, Michael announced he's not suing Angela. The rumors are not true, in case y'all were wondering. He is not suing her. But we're going to come back and talk about that, and then Monday, fingers crossed, everything goes well. We'll be back to talk about The Other Way, Forbidden Love, with all three of us back together. Thanks for joining us tonight. Make sure you're following Dee Dee. I'm going to tag her in this video. So if you're not following her, you should be. And make sure you're following me on all social media platforms at George Massey, georgemassey.com. Anywhere you get your podcast, type in The George Massey Show. See you guys. Yes, I'm looking forward to Sunday as well. More drama. I'm all for the drama. All right, guys. Everybody have a good night. We'll talk to you really soon. Bye.
Bye.